Born in a prison cell to a condemned thief, Moll Flanders enters the world already marked by society's judgment. Her mother, awaiting transportation to the American colonies, leaves behind an infant who will spend her entire life navigating the brutal economics of survival in 18th century England. What happens when the world offers you nothing but demands everything? Moll's story forces us to confront this question with unflinching honesty. In a society where women had virtually no legitimate means of self-support, where poverty was treated as moral failure rather than systemic injustice, Moll's choices become a mirror reflecting the hypocrisies of her age and perhaps our own. Her journey from abandoned orphan to convicted criminal to prosperous plantation owner spans continents and decades, yet the central tension remains constant. How do we judge those who break the rules when the rules themselves are broken? Moll learns early that marriage represents her only respectable path to survival. She approaches matrimony with cold calculation, each husband a potential solution to economic vulnerability. Her first husband dies. Her second, a draper, flees to France after bankruptcy. Most shocking is her marriage to a sea captain who takes her to Virginia, where she discovers his mother is actually her own, making him unknowingly her half-brother. "Give me not poverty, lest I steal," Moll declares, acknowledging what polite society refuses to admit. Marriage functions primarily as economic transaction. When she marries a banker after presenting herself as a wealthy widow, renting fine clothes and apartments to create the illusion, she merely strips away the polite fictions masking marriage's financial reality. Think about modern dating apps where people filter by income and education. Moll's brutal honesty about the marriage market feels strangely contemporary. Through five husbands, Moll experiences every variation of matrimonial disappointment, death, bankruptcy, discovery, yet continues pursuing this path because society offers no legitimate alternative. Her approach exposes the uncomfortable truth that institutions claiming moral authority often operate on thoroughly economic principles. When marriage no longer provides security, Moll turns to theft with the same calculating intelligence she applied to finding husbands. Now in her 40s, her beauty fading, she confronts the harsh reality that aging women without family support face limited options beyond poverty or prostitution. Her first theft occurs almost accidentally, an unattended bundle in a shop, but the ease and relief from immediate want lead her down a path of increasingly sophisticated crime. Desperation evolves into professional expertise. Moll masters shoplifting, pickpocketing, and house burglary, learning to dress as a widow to appear respectable. Her governess, a former midwife turned criminal facilitator, serves as fence, advisor, and protector, illustrating how women created alternative support systems when conventional structures failed them. Yet Moll never fully hardens. She avoids violence, refuses to steal from the poor, and experiences genuine remorse after robbing a family whose house is on fire. Her intelligence and adaptability, qualities that might have made her successful in legitimate business had she been born male and wealthy, find expression instead in criminal enterprise. Society creates the trap through indifference to women's economic vulnerability, then condemns those caught in it. Moll's criminal career ends where her life began, Newgate Prison. Arrested for stealing silk, she's confined in the same notorious jail where her mother gave birth to her. "Nothing was more terrible to my imagination," she confesses, "the place where my mother suffered so deeply." Despite all her efforts to escape her origins, Moll finds herself trapped by circumstances beyond her control. The squalid conditions reflect a justice system focused on punishment rather than rehabilitation. Prisoners packed together, disease rampant, guards corrupt. Most disturbing is the prison chaplain, whose perfunctory spiritual ministrations prepare prisoners for execution rather than offer genuine comfort. For perhaps the first time, Moll has no immediate strategy for survival. This forced pause allows something new to emerge, genuine moral reckoning. "I looked back with horror upon my past life," she confesses. Whether this represents genuine spiritual awakening or merely another survival strategy remains deliberately ambiguous. her reprieve through transportation to the American colonies offers not just physical salvation, but an opportunity for reinvention, a chance to create a new self beyond the constraints that shaped her criminal career. Transportation to Virginia represents both punishment and opportunity. The American colonies, with their fluid social structures and labor demands, offered possibilities for reinvention impossible in England's rigid society. Aboard the transport ship, Moll reunites with her Lancashire husband, also transported for crimes. Their partnership now rests on mutual understanding rather than deception, perhaps Moll's first relationship where both parties see each other clearly. Virginia brings Moll face to face with her son from her incestuous marriage, a profound reckoning with long-deferred consequences. Her son, now a successful plantation owner, welcomes her without judgment, offering the inheritance left by her mother. This completes a circle spanning generations and continents. With this inheritance and her husband's labor, Moll establishes an increasingly prosperous plantation. Yet this American success story carries troubling moral complexity. Moll's prosperity rests partly on criminal proceeds and depends entirely on enslaved labor, fact the narrative acknowledges without fully confronting. Her redemption remains partial, complicated by colonial economics that allow her to transition from exploited to exploiter. This honest work raises uncomfortable questions about what constitutes legitimate versus illegitimate wealth in a society built on exploitation. Money dominates Moll's consciousness, not as abstract wealth, but as concrete protection against vulnerability. Her obsessive accounting reflects acute awareness that financial resources mean survival for a woman without family protection. This economic lens reveals both personal preoccupation and broader truths about emerging capitalist society. Moll repeatedly observes how being female constrains her options in a society where women had limited property rights. Her criminal career represents adaptation to structural constraints as much as moral failing. We still measure success through financial metrics and stigmatize poverty as personal failure. Moll's brutal honesty about economic necessity feels uncomfortably relevant. The narrative exposes the economic underpinnings of supposedly moral institutions. The justice system operates through bribes, marriage functions as financial transaction, even religious penitence can be commodified when Moll's remorse helps secure her reprieve. Her eventual prosperity in Virginia completes her journey from destitution to security. Yet this resolution carries moral complexity. Her plantation wealth depends on enslaved labor, mirroring the power imbalances she experienced throughout her life. Moll returns to England wealthy and elderly. The society that would have executed her as a thief now welcomes her as a colonial property owner. Redemption depends more on economic success than moral transformation. Yet, Moll claims to spend her final years in sincere penitence. This reflection emerges from personal conviction rather than religious pressure. The circular structure, from Newgate birth to crime to transportation and return, creates symmetry, inviting us to consider how environment shapes destiny. Most poignantly, Moll's final years with her husband represent her first genuine partnership. Unlike earlier marriages based on calculation, this relationship rests on mutual understanding of shared flaws and redemption. Whether Moll's penitence represents true transformation or another performance remains deliberately ambiguous. This ambiguity forces us to confront our judgments about economic necessity and moral choice. In a world that punishes poverty while rewarding wealth regardless of origin, Moll's story refuses simple moral lessons. Instead, it invites us to consider how we might act facing her limited choices and to examine the systems that create the very crimes they condemn.